RTI.
Welcome back to part two of Postcard from Pop Rad Boys and Girls, your weekly alternative look at the news with me, Eric Wiltshire, at the base of the beautiful Tatry Mountains, and Lee Banks, soggy in England.
I know, it's a good job the builder's just arrived, isn't it?
Is it
honestly?
Bob the Builder, we can't fix it.
No, it's Dan the Mending Man.
Dan the Mending... Oh, very good. World's... Blimey.
Oh,
no,
I've just knocked my coffee over.
I can't believe this.
What?
The headline reads, "The World's Biggest." And then it talks about England.
Well, we are big in certain areas in England. Usually around the sort of lower middle regions.
Ah, I see. Well, apparently the world's biggest offshore farm has gone online in Kent in the southeast of England. The Swedish energy company called Vattenfall have kicked off these 100 turbines that are expected to generate enough electricity to power 200,000 homes. Now, obviously, the energy secretary is all very happy and wonderful about all this sort of stuff. And yet, I'm suddenly thinking... I can remember the day when I went down to Herne Bay, which is near where this wind flax farm thing is. Apparently there's 250 of these things, which cost £780 million to put in, which is a lot of money. They're 115 metres tall, and they're spread over 35 square kilometres, which is a lot of impact on the old horizon, isn't it?
Well, it is. In a way, it is. But I have to say that, actually, I like the look of wind power things, turbines. Yeah, I think they look lovely. It's almost a return to the days where we used to have windmills on every high hill in Britain.
Oh.
And it was gorgeous, and you could hear them turning and spinning. And it's green. But why have we had to have a Swedish energy giant come in and do it? Why couldn't we put our own little windmills up?
Sounds like the hovercraft to me.
What sounds like the hovercraft?
Invented in the UK and sent abroad to be made into proper things.
That's true, actually, isn't it?
Yeah.
That's where, right, because at the moment, you know, Britain has been described as the poorest country in Europe.
Yes.
And it's because we don't actually do anything. All we do, we're like, the British are like this vicious disease that eats away itself. And we just go, right, we've run out of money, so let's pay more tax, so we'll go. You know, the government have actually suggested that our wages are sent directly to the tax man. And then the tax man gives us an allowance.
Right.
Well, why don't we go out and do something
proper? How to kill off investment banking, how to kill off forward investment, and how to kill off half the businesses in the UK. Not suggesting that they're nicking the money, but how can you send all the money to the tax man and then get the credit back later? That's ridiculous.
Exactly.
Absolutely ridiculous.
And what we'll do... They take your council tax, your ordinary tax, everything, if whatever you've got to pay that involves the government, they will take that before you see your income. That's why everybody is deserting good old Blighty.
Well, the trouble is, Lee, I can see where some of it makes sense. Because there are some people who, no matter what you do, and I always say this to people, it's like I can't go too fast in my car. I can't break the law because I'm one of the silly beggars that will always get caught.
Yeah.
The trouble is there's so many others who just flaunt the law, don't care, and never ever pay tax at all, like that heathen band of... I'm trying to remember which country it was now because I don't want to sort of suggest the wrong country, who've basically taken over a chunk of East London as criminals, and they're not going to pay any tax. They're not going to pay to the system. They don't. They just take out. They don't put anything in. And that's the problem.
But their money's not going to get sent to the tax man directly. No, if they're dealing in drugs or stolen goods or bank robberies, the bank's not going to say, before you steal this money, I have to send it to the tax man, and they will send you what's left. Yeah, that's just like daft.
Well, it might stop those that are buying drugs having the money to buy them. Maybe.
Oh, Eric.
Maybe.
Eric.
Maybe.
Furious.
Anyway,
would stop people smoking a split.
Yeah, I know. Anyway, congratulations to the Czech Republic.
Just, well done. Check this out.
Oh, He's so tabloid today.
No, that's the only joke I'd rehearsed, you know. All, I've spent all yesterday rehearsing that.
Which is just down the road from me, of course, over here in the gorgeous Slovak Republic. This is all to do with Google and the Street View mapping service. Now, in the Czech Republic, they said it invades citizens privately disproportionately. Which in,
excuse me, that phone ringing is our Delhi correspondent.
Is it? Do you want to grab him quick.
Hang up.
We're hoping to get you a live connection, boys and girls.
Yeah. We're actually on air now. You should be on with us, but you're like 3 hours late. Yeah. Oh, that's it. Deadline's a deadline.
Can we put him on live, do you think?
No, you won't hear him. He's on my little phone. Hang on, I'll put the speaker on. Just a minute, I'm going to try and put you on speaker.
This will be a laugh. Technology personified.
Oh, you're quite right. I've just cut him off. Sorry, Luke.
Call him back.
Hang on. I'll call him back. You carry on with this and I'll call him back. Then.
Right, well, apparently what's happened, last week the Czech Office for Personal Data Protection refused for the second time to allow Google to collect images for its panoramic street view service. And the reason being is they feared it would actually break the law. Now, apparently the chairman of the Czech Privacy Watchdog said that the technology behind Google's system was a threat to the privacy of the country's 10.5 million citizens. And because of all that, they've actually said no to them. Now,
he's not answering the phone to me now.
I'm not surprised. Google are having the same problem all over the place because they've been having meetings in Germany and various other countries. But the bottom line is Google is still sort of trying to work with the Czech government. But the way that the company is publishing images at the moment is to blur individuals out in the Czech Republic, which I can see the compromise, but it does beg the question, why didn't Google go and ask first?
Well, that's a simple fact. I can explain this partially to you, because the law states, and this is the law of the world, not just of the UK or a Lee Banks law, this is the real law, that you can photograph anybody's house and their presence in the house as long as you don't go over their boundary.
Mm-hmm.
Right? You've got to do it from the street, and that's exactly what Google are doing. But what Google are doing is literally invading everybody's privacy.
Yeah.
Because you can see what people have got in the house, you can see what cars they drive, they can see everything.
Yes.
And it's the Czech government that really finally has stood up against them and said, this is wrong, and of course it's wrong.
I think the problem is balancing where it's good for the community and citizens as opposed to not being good for the community and citizens. Because
the invasion of privacy is never good for you.
The UK's Information Commissioner had said that Google Street View's okay, and in a quote, he said, if consent, i.e. to upload images of private citizens, were required by law, then the prejudices of, say, match of the day or a cricket tournament or whatever else would have to gain the consent.
Our India correspondent is on.
Is he? I'll tell you what, boys and girls, we'll take a short, very tiny break. We'll be right back with you.
From the heart of Europe to the world, RTI.
Welcome back, boys and girls, to Postcard from Poprad. Slight communications problems, but Lee's been on the phone to our correspondent over there in India, Luke, who's going to bring us an update. And this is all to do with the Commonwealth Games that should be opening shortly. There's a lot of news in and around it. Well, it's all over the place. CNN have got it the lot. But we've actually got our man, Luke, who's actually living opposite the Games. Unfortunately, technology wasn't working with us. But Lee, you've spoken to Luke. What did he say?
He would say, really, at the moment, if you're not right in the heart of the, you know, in the centre of where the games are going to be taking place, there is a lot of indifference to what's going on. But the closer you get to the venue, you start to feel the fact that, as Luke said, there's a lot of people are really, really saddened by what's happened, because this was a burgeoning nation's chance to actually do something and show itself to the world, finally, to say, we've not only got the biggest growing economy in the world, we can also turn on an event like this, and it's going to reflect really badly on them, and I think it's really sad.
So he's quite sad about the whole event, then?
Well, unlike me, and he's like you. He enjoys sport. I think he's all right. Cancel it, man. You know, all I can see is...
So did you manage to ask him if they were still positive about the games going ahead?
Well, no. What he said to that was, obviously, he's not in a position particularly to have asked that. Mm-hmm. But he was saying the general sort of feeling is just abject fear that it might not go ahead. The chances of it going ahead are pretty good, because actually we've got people flying out there already and getting ready for it.
So we'll try and hook up with him next week and see how things go.
Yeah, let's see how it develops.
Thank you, Luke, for that, if you're listening at home. We couldn't hook up with you, but we'll do it another time when you don't have to be subjected to the banks person. That's probably the easiest way around it. Apparently there was a nasty virus that went on to Twitter, which produced some really embarrassing results for lots of people. And I have to say, before we start this story, it wasn't the people concerned who created these links that happened. It was a virus. But unfortunately, it did end up with some rather nasty stuff, didn't it, Lee?
Well, I think it's... Yes, I'm not. I don't think it's funny at all. I think it's funny, though, that Lord Sugar, Alan Sugar, who's one of the richest blokes in Britain...
And of course, one of the people that produce so many personal computers at budget prices as well.
He does what? He makes computers for budgies.
Budget, dear boy. Yeah. Budget.
Well, that's the thing then. He should have known, as somebody who created computers, that it wasn't actually him who'd caused this bug to bring Twitter to its knees.
I can tell you a great story about Lord Sugar, which took place during a meeting of journalistic types. There were several people like you there as well, opposite Broadcasting House in London. And I took him back to his early days when he was bringing out the first computers. And I love Alan Sugar because he says it as it is. He must be the PR person's nightmare, because he's just too flipping honest. And he actually said that in the early days of the personal computers that they were selling, everybody was, you know, they were doing really well. But and he used the word anoraks, not me. The anoraks were all sort of panicking about it, not having a fan in there, and it would be the end of the world. And he'd done everything had been checked out more than a dozen times or more. And all the technicians were going, well, what do you want to put a fan in that computer for? It's not worth it. There's not enough heat generated. But the anoraks were so angry about this. In the end, what Amstrad did was put a fan in it just to keep them all quiet. And they all said, it's a brilliant computer now! And I tell you what, that's what Alan's good at. Reading and sussing the market out. And
he don't understand it now, does he? If he thinks that he could cause Twitter to shut down.
And not only that, it was your friend's wife as well.
I know, Sarah Brown, I think this is really funny, honestly. She's got about, 1.1 million followers on Twitter.
Jeepers creepers.
She because of this bug, she actually said 1.1 billion people.
Did she? It wasn't her that sent the followers there.
Because of the bug. Yeah, she didn't do it personally. It wasn't her seriously doing it. But she did send everybody the links to a pornographic site.
You monkey, you just love all this. But I'll clarify that. That wasn't Susan Sarah herself who did it.
It was
actually a bug.
It wasn't Mrs. Brown.
But the new kids on the block are not having a good week, are they? So that's Twitter and Facebook all in one week. Oh, my word. Apparently, Twitter fixed... I've got the two words together again. I've got the same problem as last week. Twitter fixed the problem within about 25 minutes. But it took a long time to fix the repair.
Yeah, and I wonder if they could do it in 140 characters.
It does make you wonder, doesn't it? Oh, my word. And it's the same thing, though, Lee. It's back to the question of earlier. It's like, you know... I still have moments of lapse with regard to mobile phones. Until I came to Slovakia, I was used to having fixed landlines. I understand fixed landlines. They make sense to me. And when I'm out, it's like I had a number of phones in my office in London. Yeah. And that people would try and phone my mobile, say. So I answer the call, and then somebody else would phone my direct office number and get the voicemail. And they'll go, where are you then? You're not there. Where are you? Blah, and they go on and on. And I'll phone back and say, well, I was on the mobile. Oh, yes, well, we tried the mobile and it was busy, so we phoned your office. Hello, good morning. What is the point if the mobile's busy, you're phoning the office line?
Well, that's it. I've got three mobiles.
I know.
And the landline.
And you don't answer any of them?
No, because I don't know who's ringing me.
But the problem I have is I still have little lapses where I don't remember the mobile. And I have to get to the office and go, oh, no, I've left my mobile home. Belt back to the flat, come back to the... Oh, my word. It'd be so
simple.
Now,
this is the fact, though, isn't it? This is the fact, going back to what we said right at the beginning. Everything dictates you. You are now controlled by modern technology.
Well, people I'm not, because... No. Look, think about the predecessor to the mobile phone.
When you didn't play your computer a few weeks ago, you were desperate within 48 hours.
I was upset.
That's
why I've got different systems, and if my internet main service goes down, I've got a backup, which is in my SMS chipping thingy, and I can plug that one into that one and stick that one up, and I'm on again. Not very fast, maybe, but I'm back talking to the world. And if I can't talk to the world, I'm like a man with no arms, and stop it. I'd be distressed. You're distressing me.
We are trivialising the world with things like...
But think about it. Before the mobile phone, you had a pager. The point of a pager is the most frustrating, annoying tech that's ever been invented.
Why? I quite like mine.
No, because what happens is you're driving... you're driving up the Tatras Mountains, your pager goes bleep, 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 and it's the boss says, can you call me, Lee? And you're thinking, where's the phone box? And you get to the phone box, and especially in London, you pick the phone up, and it's got bodily fluids in it where someone spat in it, plus the fact it's not working properly, plus the fact someone stuck chewing gum in the hole so you can't put your money in it. So you can't find... And you're sitting there, and the thing goes bleep, bleep, bleep again. It's the boss. It's calling you. And it's pathetic. Absolute pathetic piece of tech. It isn't.
I used to love it because it made you feel special. When I was a corporate entity and I had to have one, it used to sit on my belt like it was a little gun holster.
I know.
And it gave you a feeling of power, and people respected you for it. People looked up to you, he's got a pager.
Well, it's like people who sit in their cars with... Oh, no, as you walk down the high street with a Bluetooth earpiece.
Yeah. Well, exactly.
What is the point of that? What is the flipping point? I'm very happy that when I get to my car, my phone says, oh, it's the car. It's Eric's car. All right. Okay. And the car says, oh, here comes Eric with his phone. Let's get the phone to talk to the car. By the time I've unlocked the car and got in...
That's just weird, Eric.
My phone, by the time I get in the driving seat, my phone is already communicating with my car and saying, let's put the hands-free on for Eric because he's going to drive and be safe. And that's what happens. It's simple. So
I have
simple.
A story to tell you, right? Very quick story, which is true, right? I'm going back now 15 years, maybe a tiny bit more, about 15 years. And I didn't have a mobile phone, but I had a pager and I had a car phone.
Right. Not one of the flying bricks.
Yeah, like that. You used to sit there at the front of the car, and it was plugged into your cigarette lighter, and it just used to sit there. And what I did, because I didn't know, right, I was on a stakeout, and I could tell you who was staking out. He's very, very famous, and I was sitting outside his house, staking him out, but I won't mention his name, because it's not fair, because I'd have to tell you what it was about then. Anyway, and I was sitting there, and I was on my phone, I was phoning up the office, I was working for the Sunday People at the time, and I was on the phone to the office, and I had phoned my girlfriend up, and the phone people, because it's boring, I've been there, so I'll stake this place out for 8 hours.
Sorry, ladies and gentlemen, just to interject, we've got another dog story after this Shaggy dog story as well.
Is it not just nearly, you just spoke, I was just going to end it then. So anyway, all of a sudden, these electric gates to this famous person's house opened, and he shot off in his Range Rover, and I started the car, and it wouldn't start because I'd flattened the battery with my phone.
So you're right. Oh, they were terrible things to carry about. But I remember being very proud when I got my first one. Wonderful toy.
Honestly, that's what I mean. I felt great. With my suit, with my pager, with my car phone and everything. I was just the man, I tell you.
But did you go to the extent, as I did, of having a television in your car?
Only when I'd nicked it and it was only in the car.
No, I had one in the dashboard of the car. It was fabulous. I'm sure it was illegal at that time. It certainly is now. Anyway, moving along. A dog owner, see, I told you it was two shaggy dog stories.
This is terrible. This is really bad.
Has been prevented from finding his pet, which apparently was microchipped, because of the Data Protection Act.
Lee, unbelievable.
What is this all about?
Well, basically, what you've got, right, this company takes your money, right, so that if you lose your dog, they can find it for you. Right.
Okay, got it.
So, it works. Brilliant. They find his dog. They find the bloke's dog, right? And they won't tell him where it is because of data protection. I can't believe it.
The Team GB has gone nuts, hasn't it?
Oh, God. Honestly.
Yeah.
Incredible.
Apparently, the average cost of implanting one of these microchips, which they've often suggested you do on the television, I note,
It's advertised
is between £25 and £30, although the vet's charges can sort of change a little bit. And also the Kennel Club, which I'll say no more about, recommended to DEFRA that all puppies are microchipped before they're sold, which kind of makes sense. The trouble is that the microchip doesn't... I mean, if you imagine, some of these dogs are worth thousands of pounds. So you you nip out to the next town, nick a puppy, come back, stick a microchip
in it. Nick a puppy?
And people
stick it in the bike, right?
I can promise you, people steal pedigree dogs. They do it.
Of course they do. Of course they do. Yeah. I had a chum called Dylan. I actually called my dog Dylan. And it was a pedigree. And people were always trying to nick it.
That's a contradiction in terms, though.
What?
Dylan and pedigree.
Chum.
Think about it. You're going to ignore that, aren't you, now, completely?
Yeah.
But the trouble is that there isn't kind of like a pet, I don't know, passport that goes with the pet that's got a little photo on it and, you know, little Benji's got his photo in there, to actually confirm which dog is what. And it's just incredibly difficult. But the trouble is,
it's an incredibly strange thing that, what's it called, Anibase, isn't it? The firm's called Anibase.
Yeah, I think it is. Yeah.
Who are actually taking money to give you the security that if your pet goes missing, we can trace it because of this chip it's got in the ear.
Right. Before we run out of time, boys and girls, we wish them luck with that, and don't nick doggies. It is now officially on postcard from Pat Brad. It is none other than Toilet Time! I love this feature. We're starting off in Poland, Lee.
In Poland, that's appropriate. Hang on, you'll have to wait while I find that I've got it here.
I think this story made just about every news network on the planet. Good. Actually, it wasn't bad for the Polish tourist board, was it, at all?
Well, how could it be good for the Polish tourist board? I think it's absolutely horrendous. I think it's the most terrifying thing I've ever heard of in my life.
It happens in America, where they get anacondas and stuff, and people still go to America on holiday, don't they?
Yeah, but you see, that's the thing. Have we actually told everybody what's happened yet?
No.
Oh, all right, and I'll save that last bit that I was just going to say.
All right, I'll do it now. Apparently a Polish pensioner, because she pulled up the toilet seat, and underneath, peering out at her from the toilet bowl in southwest Poland, she saw... I can't do it.
It's the most terrifying thing that could ever happen to me.
I'd be absolutely paranoid. I would freeze. I have a paranoia about snakes. I did fight it once for a program on
You fought a snake?
No, I fought my fear. And it was on the Discovery Channel when there was just like one of them. Yeah, it was a genuine story. I'm absolutely paranoid about snakes. They freak me out. And the press people at Discovery Channel in the UK knew this story, and they coached me. It was nice young ladies coaching me, and they eventually managed to get this snake, which was an Indian python, round my neck. And they were taking pictures of me for the television with this snake round my neck, and I'm all red faced and thinking, this is not good for television. I don't like this.
What if it ate your head?
Well, exactly. But apparently it had been fed, so they weren't too much worried about it.
Oh, I tell you what, you said this happens in America quite a lot.
Oh, God. But anyway, apparently this woman found this six-and-a-half-foot anaconda, which is about 2 metres, coming out of her toilet bowl.
Well, you know, you said it happens in America. You know what I think? I think that's what happened to Elvis. I don't think Bigfoot killed him at all.
You think
I think he just turned around and saw a big anaconda coming up out of the toilet bowl at him. Andy! That word that I can't say.
Anyway, apparently the anaconda's been taken to the zoo locally, and police are now looking around to find out who the owner was. I'm just trying to think how it got in the drains in the first place. But mark you, if it...
Well, they do. It does happen, doesn't it?
Yeah, because if it's a tower block or something like that, or one of those sort of Panelac-type systems of housing, where you've got lots of blocks of flats all built from concrete, it would be very logical for a snake in one apartment to crawl down and go through the toilet, because they can do that. And
What if it has to go up? It's got to start on the ground, so it had to work its way up that
Well, it could have come from the top down.
Well, how would it have got it after falling out of an aeroplane?
No, because the owner would have taken it up there in the first place as maybe a small snake, and then it gets bigger and bigger as he feeds it, and it ends up at 2 metres long, then thinks,
you mean it lived there?
Yes.
Oh,
well, you're quick
should
today,
have gone to anything.
You could find out. And apparently a train company's under fire for removing toilets. What?
Unbelievable again.
It is. The Southern Railway has decided not to include the facilities on new trains being built from services on the Brighton line. What do you have to do? You have to sort of take the window down and have a wee out the window.
I was going to say, do it out the window. This is the end of the old English tradition of laying a cable between cities.
Yes, and I think we'll save for next week. Lee's got a great top 10, which I'm not going to tell you about. So I think we'll save that for next week as we get towards the end of things. We'll finish off very quickly. It's time to get dead drunk.
Oh no, this is terrible. I'm nearly there. I've lost it. I can't find it. It's there. Yeah,
you've got 30 seconds.
Officials in Providence City in America have granted a liquor license to the owner of a funeral home, right? And he's going to turn his funeral home into an Irish pub. So you're literally going to have a wakey-wakey, right? Oh. And it's time to get dead drunk down at the funeral home.
No.
I think it's a wonderful idea.
Oh, no, so inappropriate. So right. Inappropriate. Mark you... Having been to an Irish wake, and they are very different to certain other funeral ceremonies.
Yeah, they're a bit funny.
The way that they actually celebrate the life rather than worrying about the death, which I think is quite a good thing.
That's a good thing, yeah.
And that tends to go on in Slovakia as well. I mean, if ever you... the All Saints Day is coming up, as it's known in England. And when that happens here in Slovakia, it's actually a national holiday if it's during the week. But everybody goes to the cemetery, and every grave has got flowers and candles on it. Yeah. It looks absolutely gorgeous. And all they do is commemorate the life, which is actually a really positive way to do it, isn't it?
Can I just ask you something, Mr.
Very
Mr.
quickly,
Wilson.
We're out of time. Quick.
I had 30 seconds. You told me I had 30 seconds. You just had 2 minutes.
On that happy note, we'll leave you till next week, boys and girls. That was Postcard from Potbrad with Eric Wiltshire and...
Me, Lee G. Banks.
Oh, still in the 70s as always. See you next week, boys. Boys. Blah, 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 blah. See you next week, boys and girls. Take care. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
This is RTI, from the heart of Europe to the world. The Station of the Stars.